Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Good evening, and thank you, Douglas. We just want to welcome you to the program tonight. And this is going to be a money-back guarantee that you're just absolutely going to have your socks blown off tonight. This is going to be an awesome, awesome program. And I just want to welcome you to. We have lots of new listeners in this evening from Phoenix. So just welcome those folks and the people out in California and in College Station, Texas, and hopefully we have some wonderful people in Ohio listening because of the guests that we have tonight. So just we have a wonderful nationwide, worldwide audience tonight. So just welcome to the show. I just love this new time change. It's just now getting dark in the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas, and I'm looking out the window here of my penthouse, and I can see MD Anderson and Methodist Hospital and Memorial Hospital, and where I work at Baylor College of Medicine and Texas Children's Hospital. And it's just awesome to be able to say I live in the best city in the country, and I just love Houston. But welcome to the program, and we ask that you just sit back, grab your cup of coffee or soda, and enjoy the program. You may want a notepad. We always try to give you some stuff right out of the gates to kind of write down and try to implement this week. Before we get going too far, I want to let you know next week we're going to have a wonderful individual from San Diego, California, Jennifer Burns. And I met Jennifer this week, and I asked her to be on the program, and she gracefully said yes, and she has a wonderful story that she's going to break the silence on in her own personal life, and then she's going to talk about something that I've been very interested in recently, and how art has become a therapy for her, and I asked her to go into that in a little detail next week. So that'll be the next week's program. So we want you to be part of that. Jennifer Burns from San Diego, California. Jennifer, I know she's listening tonight. Thank you for accepting that on short notice. But it's going to be a wonderful program next week. Before we get going too into the program, I want to let you know in the next few months, I'm going to be a little bit everywhere, three times in California. So, Douglas, maybe we can have a cup of coffee sometime. That's where the radio show is based out of. Going to be in Phoenix, going to be in New Mexico, going to be in Chicago for two. We're training two different counties, a two-county program on their what they're trying to do with trauma-informed schools. Going to be in Connecticut, going to be in Wisconsin Dells. Going to be speaking in Texas three times, hopefully Canada. We're working out negotiations with Canada. And then sometime, I believe in June, I will be in Columbus, Ohio with our guests this evening. So just keep thinking about me. If you're in that area, feel free to come by and say hi. I'd love to be able to get a chance to meet you. I always want to start off with something that I want to kind of just give you some encouragement of what you need to start maybe this week doing, not for somebody else, what you can start doing for yourself. And we talked last week and gave you a six or seven, but we won't do that many tonight because we have a full show. But start being yourself. genuinely and proudly trying to be anyone else that anybody else wants you to be is a waste of the person that you are. So be yourself. Embrace that individual inside of you that has wonderful ideas, wonderful strengths, and beauty like nobody else has. Be the person you know yourself to be, the very best version of you on your terms. Above all, be true to you. And if you cannot put your heart in it, take yourself out of it. If you can't put your heart in it, take yourself out of it. Start being yourself. Start noticing and living in the present. This very moment in time, for me, for our guest, for Doug, for all the people that's listening, and for you, is a miracle. Right now is the only moment that's guaranteed to you. Right now is life. So stop thinking about how great things are going to be in the future. Stop dwelling on what you did in the past and what didn't happen in the past. Learn to be in the here and now and experience life as it's happening. And appreciate the world for the beauty that it holds for you right now. How about this one? Start valuing the lessons your mistakes teach you. You know, a lot of people will tell you mistakes are awful, but I want to let you know, mistakes are okay. They're the stepping stones of progress. If you're not failing from time to time, you're not trying really hard enough, and you're not learning much. So when you make the mistakes, learn from those, take risk, stumble, fall, and then get up and try it again. Appreciate that you're pushing yourself, learning, growing, and improving. Significant achievements are almost always invariably realized at the end of a long road of failures. One of the mistakes you fear might just be the link to your greatest achievement yet. Let's do one more. Start focusing on the possibility of positive outcomes. The mind must believe it can do something before it's capable of actually doing it. The way to overcome negative thoughts and destructive emotions is to develop opposing positive emotions that are stronger and more powerful. Listen to your self-talk and replace those negative thoughts with positive ones. Regardless of how a situation seems, focus on what you do want to happen and then take the next positive step forward. No, you can't control everything that happens to you in life. We know that. But you can control how you react to those things. Everyone's life has positive and negative aspects. Whether you're happy and successful in the long run depends greatly on what aspects you focus on. Just a few things I just want to throw out at you. Apply them this week if you can. Think on the positive, and just remember that you can do it. You have that ability inside of you to overcome and do it. We do want you to call into the program tonight. We love when we get callers. Douglas is sitting right there by the phone waiting for it to ring to take care of you at 888-627-6008. Tonight, we have a double blessing. We have Dr. Joe and Darty Hendershot from Ohio. And Dr. Joe is a sought-after speaker about the effects of trauma on learning and behaviors and working with, listen to this word, these two words, working with wounded students. And we're going to dig deep into that tonight. And he's a founder of Hope for the Wounded. He provides consulting, staff training, and an online course. He's authored three books, Reaching the Wounded Student, 7 Ways to Transform the Lives of Wounded Students, and he co-authored the most recent book that just came out with Darty, his wife, Supporting the Wounded Educator, a Trauma-Sensitive Approach to Self-Care. He has over 30 years in education. He's recipient of a 2015 National Christian Crystal Star Award for Dropout Prevention and the 2016 Bixler Award, which recognizes excellence in education. His lovely wife is going to be here to make sure we don't get out of control. And she's a co-founder of Hope for the Wounded. And along with her administrative roles, Darty is a trained and formerly licensed foster adoptive parent and is a huge advocate of professionals working with children of trauma. And are you ready for probably the best thing that gets me so excited on their bios? Is they have, are you ready? Brace yourself, 9 children. Joe and Darty, it is an honor to have you on the program tonight. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Williams. We're pleased to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate it. I know that you are in Georgia right now, in Savannah, and you've been down there just slinging sweat and teaching and screaming and speaking and training, and you probably both are just wore out. So I really, from your hotel room, I appreciate you calling in and just being part of the program tonight. It's an honor.
No problem. We're at the National Youth at Risk Conference in Savannah, Georgia, and it's a pleasure to be down here working with educators from across the world, really. So
yeah,
that's where we're going. Thank you for having us.
I hope some of your friends are listening tonight too, Joe and Darty, and maybe they can call in and tell us something about you that we don't know.
Maybe that's scary. Let's not go there.
I tell you what, I just want to kind of start off by just saying how much I respect you all, what you do, and the work that you have done, and the work that you continue doing, and the passion that you have. And Joe, I've talked to you in great detail, and I just felt like our spirits have kind of mended together because of your dislike, maybe, for the word trauma. And I think it's an overused word. Sometimes we throw that word out as an old hat. You use the word wounded. Talk to me about that. Where did you guys come up with that concept, and a little bit about what y'all do with this Hope for the Wounded that you have?
Well, Dr. Williams, with our background, I've been working with what we normally call at-risk youth since really 1983. And around 2006, I was a training, going to all kinds of national youth at-risk conferences. And we certainly have at-risk youth and at-risk programs for at-risk youth that are effective, that are good, that are well-researched, and we want to keep and use. But I worked for several years in treatment centers as a principal, as a recreational therapist, teacher in alternative education. And I think we just started getting this term at risk. And we realized that there are kids really beyond at risk, kids that are wounded, kids that, you know, the strategies, the at-risk strategies we decided were really good for at-risk preventative measures in education. But for kids, and the research today says 47.9% of kids today are dealing with some type of trauma. And we use the word wounded. And so we just go into schools and we train people on the difference between at-risk and wounded. And we've been doing this since 2006 when Darty and I co-founded Hope for the Wounded.
Yeah, the Joe and Darty, either one can answer. What do you, how do you define at risk? Aren't all kids, youth, children at risk?
Well, it certainly could be. Certainly there's indicators that we want to put preventative measures in place to keep them from dropping out of school, from being at risk of low grades. I mean, we're talking from the educator's perspective now.
Right, right.
So, you know, we want to put all measures in place to keep kids to reach their full potential. Mm-hmm.
So what's the difference between at risk and wounded when it comes to the students, to the youth?
Well, the reason that we picked the word wounded, and I'm sorry, my voice is really just kind of not in great shape tonight, so bear with me. I think I sound like a little old lady. so this is real life here. But, you know, wounded is rooted in the Greek word for trauma. But we did feel like, you know, we wanted people to understand the significance of the impact of trauma on children. And wounded is just a deeper word. And the Greeks define it as, you know, in the beginning it was always viewed as a physical trauma, but we've now come to realize that that other types of, you know, abuse and neglect and things like that leave emotional scars that you can't see on the surface. And those things have a profound impact on a child's learning, on their behavior, on their relationships. And let's face it, relationships are where we connect with the world that we live in, and how we find our place and where we get hope from is feeling like we have purpose in this world. And so when a child is wounded, that hope has been threatened. And so we need to acknowledge how profoundly those wounds can affect, you know, the trajectory of a child's life.
Mm. And really, just the difference between at risk and wounded is just kids that are beyond at risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, in the interventions that we use for children who are wounded tend to be responsive in nature instead of trying to be preventative, because something has already happened.
Right.
So we now need to respond to what has happened. We need to acknowledge what has happened and move forward from that place.
And Darty, with what you do, what is your passion in this role that you have that really gets you to want to jump out of bed and go for something during the day when you get the opportunity? What is that passion in you with these students?
Ooh, that is, well, the passion in me comes from, these are my children.
Yeah.
Our youngest four children are adopted. They are wounded. They've experienced the very first, most significant wound a person can have. They lost their first family. And when educators, you know, and anybody else that works with them, when they interact with my children, they become part of our family team. And they can provide a significant influence in my child's life to help them overcome the obstacles that they have. So it's very personal for us. And
yeah.
So that is where my passion comes from, because then it goes into, not only do I need you for my children, but I care about you and understand the depth of the work that you're doing and how hard it is on a daily basis. And so we want to come alongside you in that and encourage you, equip you, empower you to keep doing the hard work that you're doing.
Do you, I think, Joe, I heard you say this afternoon when I was watching some of your interviews, do you believe that children can enter into the world already wounded?
Well, it was something that I had to learn myself, and because I had, you know, I was doing all the research in the topic of woundedness, and I probably subconsciously had this judgment card that kids were making selective choices to be wounded, like their friendships or something that happened to them by a family member, parents or something. Parents, you know, could be better parents, but what I realized was that some kids, when we adopted our first daughter out of foster care, she was born into the world wounded.
Yeah.
And so it was not a choice. And so at that point, I realized as a professional educator that I had to suspend judgment when working with wounded kids, because it wasn't a choice. They didn't choose this. They didn't choose to be broken. They didn't choose to be abused. They didn't choose to be neglected. They didn't choose these types of things. So, you know, it's certainly not a choice, because if it was a choice, I mean, you know, I guess, you know, when I'm doing my presentations, I say, if woundedness was a choice, you know, who would choose it? You know?
Yeah, I was just getting ready to say, don't you think probably the majority of the kids that are the ones that's in trouble, the ones that's going to alternative schools, the ones that's being suspended, if they had their choice, they wouldn't be in that environment. They wouldn't be that type of child.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They would choose something different for sure.
Absolutely. And some of them feel like they're trapped, I'm sure. Tell you what, we're going to take our first break. And on the other side of this, I want to kind of finish that thought. But I also want to go into, what does a wounded student look like? What's some of the signs of a wounded student? So keep with us. Don't turn the dial. Hang with us. We'll be back in about a minute and 15 seconds for Breaking the Silence. And we'll be right back after this break.
HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back. We have Joe and Darty Hendershot from Ohio with us tonight, and they are just well-known, world-known speakers and educators on the wounded student. And the book, the new book that just came out, tell me what made you go another angle at this, Joe and Darty, with the wounded educator. How to support them. Well, what's this book about, and why would teachers want to pick this one up?
That was since about 2006 when I started presenting on reaching wounded students. People would come up to me afterwards and they would say, Joe, we really appreciate the information on working with wounded students, and we agree with you. We have wounded students, but what about us? What about the wounded educator? What about the wounded teacher, the administrator, support staff? And the more and more I heard that, and of course, looking at my own experience, I started saying, hey, there's value in that. So we started researching it, and...
Yeah, so I'll pick up, I guess, from here. We started doing a lot of research, but then again, you ask what drives me. I go to some of the major conferences with Joe. I can't be at all of them, but I get these ideas like I'm going to go shopping while he's presenting. You know, that has never happened, because inevitably I end up standing in the hallway with people who are crying, and they say, we want to help these kids. We want to help these kids, but I'm hurting. I don't know how to keep doing it. I don't, you know, and it was breaking our hearts, honestly. And so this book's been a long time in the making, but we didn't want to rush into it. We really wanted to give it its due diligence, be sure that we were backing up anything that we were talking about with research. And I don't want research to scare people, because it's not a dry book. It's very much a conversational book. But what we started connecting the dots with it is that, you know, you're hearing a lot right now about self-care. Everybody's screaming, you need to take care of yourself. And that sounds great. But what's getting in the way of that? And I think what we have to understand is secondary trauma is very real. And there are some people, statistics say that 70% of adults have experienced some type of trauma themselves. Yeah. And so if we have people walking into the classrooms, into the school buildings, into their communities, working with kids every day with their own unresolved trauma, or they're starting to experience the impact of that secondary trauma that they know just from working with kiddos, all the self-care in the world isn't going to help if we haven't acknowledged the impact that trauma has on us as people. We all, to some degree, are wounded. If you are in that 30% that has never known it, I am so happy for you. But both Joe and I, we have experienced some pretty significant traumas ourselves. And so we feel that. But I think that when you start to acknowledge it and recognize, that's why I respond when that child lashes out at me, realizing that we all have triggers and that's not a bad thing. I love that this radio show is called Breaking the Silence, because ultimately that's what we want, is to start a healthy conversation so that we can be supporting one another in, our journey, because we all have a very personal journey that we need to embrace, as you said. And so, that's where the book starts. We start by talking about trauma, and then we move into, what is the vision that we have? Where is it that we want to go? Because I think that that's an important part of defining ourselves. And then we move into a couple chapters of personal and professional self-care strategies in an effort to not only help ourselves as individuals, but to create healthy workplaces.
Now, is this book just for educators, or can anybody pull information and wisdom out of the book for themselves? Or is it geared towards just teachers?
Oh, it's geared towards anybody who works with children. It could be juvenile justice. It can be foster parents, adoptive parents.
If we can keep it real with you, the publisher made us narrow it down to one thing. So we went with educator because they said it's hard, things can get lost. But the information in there, I think, will resonate with anyone who advocates for children in their profession.
Well, I encourage everybody to jump on right now, Amazon, and look it up and see if it's a good fit for you. But if you're even a Sunday school teacher, if you're working with children at all, this is a book, at least from my wisdom, which is very limited, I'm sure, compared to yours. There's not too many books that's just pointed towards that. It's always pointed towards the general or something else. But I love that you funnel that down and point toward the specifics. Yeah. And I think this is going to be great.
And Dr. Williams, I will let you know, I don't know if the title, because it's so new, if it's available on Amazon yet, but we do have links on our website where people can go, they can go straight to the publisher to order it. And I also have a discount code I got permission to share, if that's okay.
Well, we all like sales.
I am all about the deal. I'm like, please don't pay full price for anything in this life, because we got to make a deal. But the code is IR as in Richard, K69, and that'll get you a 20% discount off the list price.
Of just that book or all your books?
All our books. How about that?
Hey, that's a deal. IRK69 will give you 20% off, and you can find that right on there, because I have your website right here open. Yeah. I've been on there all day. Well, all afternoon. It's Hope for the Wounded, right?
Yes, hopeforthewounded.org.
Hopeforthewounded.org. And the four is the number four. Hope for, number four, the wounded. .org, and you can go right on, and you can actually go on there and find out about the conference that's coming up in Ohio.
Yes.
You can read a couple of the blogs on there, and I enjoy it. That's great. Okay, back to the wounded child, the wounded youth, the wounded student. What does this student look like? What's some of the signs of wounded student?
Well, Joe has a whole list, but I am going to interject real quick to say the wounded child can look like anybody because it does not discriminate. Trauma does not discriminate by age, sex, socioeconomic status, nothing. It does not discriminate. So that's the first thing, is that they may look like any child that you come across. But there are some definite signs that you can look for, and Joe's going to go through those right now.
Some of the signs that we talk about when we do the training are the child to be overly stressed, to be anger, to be withdrawn, isolated, attachment, trust issues, mental health issues such as anxiety or depression, could be fearful, could be kids doing self-harm, sudden change in grades or performance, just hopelessness overall. So this could be some signs that educators look for. But like Darty said, it's hard to distinguish because it can look like anybody. And sometimes kids are quiet about it. Sometimes they're not quiet about it. So those are some of the signs that we can look for.
Okay, in my world, when I was abused, every day that I can remember of my childhood, every day at least once, I did the opposite. I became the best student that I could be. I did everything, yes, ma'am, no, sir, that type of student. I never got out of line. I tried to become ultra awesome so nobody would notice what was going on at my house. How do you detect? Because nobody, and I do in my speeches when I'm out, I always say, nobody in all of those days did anybody ever say, Greg, are you okay? How do you focus in on a student that gravitates to the positive instead of to the anger, rage, aggression, nervousness, those type of things? How do you find them in that crowd?
Well, sometimes people move towards perfectionism.
Yeah.
And, you know, I came out of a home. My father was an alcoholic, and I kept it very quiet, and nobody knew as well, like yourself. You were more of an overachiever, but I was real quiet about it. I didn't really say anything about it. So I think, you know, kids can be perfectionists. You know, try to overachieve. Kids can become quiet about it, or kids can become angry about it. And it's really hard to distinguish. And that's why I love your program. I love the fact that you're bringing awareness to it. We got more and more organizations so kids can break the silence and talk about things that are troubling them, because it's not always easily distinguishable.
Do you think... Joe, and I'm sure when you're out specifically teaching to teachers and educators, and that seems to be a lot of the audience that you and Darty reach, which is awesome, do you find that maybe time with them, that if you see a difference in their behavior on one day, that if we just spend time noticing them and put our cell phone down and close our own book and get on their level, we can actually detect maybe some red flags?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, there's always that, you know, we talk about relationships, and our big motto is connecting the dots. And we're talking more and more about mentorship programs, relationships. I spent some time with Dr. Wardle, and he taught me that it's better to be unavailable than inattentive. And I don't know, you mean, you think about that, you think about how many times we're available but inattentive. You know, and so if you're there but you're not present, and that's what I heard you open, you know, about being in the present, you know, and at your opening speech this morning. So, you know, I know when I go to my children's soccer practices or soccer games, how many parents are present but inattentive. So I think it's true when we're trying to pay attention to whether a kid's at risk or they're wounded or what they actually need. It's more than just being present. It's a matter of being attentive.
Yeah. Do you think that the last few years with the increasing of cell phones and social media and all that, that the parents have kind of checked out?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult. You know, I see a lot of it, you know, when, like you said, when I go to soccer practices and gymnastics, there's just a lot of parents, instead of watching their children perform, that are on their cell phones. And so I think more and more people, including myself, have to be more attentive, just leaving the cell phones in the car, leaving them, you know, at the door when they go home. And being attentive, and
but
especially
I think
working
that,
with wounded kids.
And I think that goes both ways, too, because I think that children are now being made available, these devices, so early on. And so where we used to have lunch and recess and these opportunities for social connection, everybody's going to their corner, you know, to get on their phone. And so it the street goes both ways in defense of the adults, because the kids are on their phones, and so they don't want to go interrupt them and get in their business and, you know, whatever. And so I think we have to be really, really intentional anymore with creating spaces where we're consciously connecting with people on a human level again instead of through our devices.
That's so important. I tell you, I could just see families sitting at tables all the time at restaurants, because I eat out a lot. I can just see a child typing or texting, "Hey, Mom, pass the ketchup," and her grabbed the ketchup and handed it across the table. I just don't understand. You know, it's the same thing. That one of the things that really irks me so much is when Facebook, and, you know, the popularity of that goes up and down, but parents will get on Facebook and tell their child how proud they are of them. Why don't you just put the phone down and look in your child's eyes and say, "I love you. I'm proud of who you are," instead of letting it be a post and everybody can like or comment, good or bad? We've missed what you guys are talking about.
Yeah, we have the opportunity to have a table here at this conference, and so I get to have some really neat conversations with people.
Oh, yeah.
And I was in a conversation just a couple hours ago with a woman, and we were talking about how, you know, the social media and our phones and everything have created this false sense of safety. But there's that part of it as adults, as educators, as people who are stepping into the lives of children who are having a hard time, there's something about that that feels uncomfortable and it feels unsafe. And so I think sometimes we hide behind our devices because it's a little bit scary to become that vulnerable. But on the flip side, people will hear one of Joe's sessions and they'll come out to me and say, "Well, I didn't know I was going to cry today." But my response to them has become, "I'm glad you did. And I'll tell you why. Because if we're going to do this hard work, we can't just know it in our mind. We have to feel it in our heart." Mm-hmm. And that begins with human connection again. And I think all of us have just, and myself included, we've all become guarded and afraid to become uncomfortable because we're just not sure how to process through it.
You know, and I try to live this. I know it's tough, but, you know, on the program and when I go out and speak, I literally give out my cell phone number to everybody in the nation. So my phone rings all the time, and I answer it.
Yeah.
And people go, you really answered the phone. Of course I did.
Yeah.
I would have given you the number unless. And then in that few minutes, and even the guest we have next week, Jennifer, called, and we touched and we ended up talking for 45 minutes to an hour. And it's like the world is craving that kind of attention. And these kids, you know, they're screaming out for that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the kids today. I did my dissertation on empathy and education, and the definition of empathy is to feel not to just step in someone else's shoes, but to feel what they feel. Mm. And so one day I was just reflecting as I was doing my research on all the definitions of empathy and stuff, and I thought, you know, Joe, you've talked with probably thousands of kids in their jail cells and treatment centers. What do they say? And if you listen to our kids today and you ask them what their story is, at the end of each story, a young man or woman, young lady will tell you, they'll say, do you feel me? Do you feel what I'm saying? You know, we hear our youth say that. And the definition of empathy is to feel what someone else feels. And so what they're saying is, can I have your empathy? Can you be empathic with my story? Do you feel my pain? So our kids today, I believe, are telling us exactly what they're looking for and what they need when they say, do you feel me?
And you know, think back on your own education. I'm going back and going through all my teachers, you know, Mr. Hurd, Mr. Campbell, Mrs. Hudson. I can go right on down the list of all the people, but the ones that come to the top of my mind are the ones that gave me the time, the ones that cared, the ones that really made an impact on me because they went the extra mile. And our kids today need those champions.
You mean you don't remember the ones that taught you 2 times x² something or other? That's not what comes to mind first.
I remember his name, but it's in vain. My algebra teacher, I don't even want to talk about him. But I do remember his name. We're going to take our last break. And then on the other side of this, we're going to talk about teachable moments. And then I want to really dig deep into that about maybe I love your perspective of this show about teachable moments, and we're going to talk about that just on the other side. Make sure if you want to call in, 888-627-6008, and we'll be back right after this break.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Awesome time talking to Joe and Darty Hendershot from Ohio, and it's just an honor to have you all here. And I knew this hour would go just lickety-split because you guys are just so easy to talk to, and I appreciate that. Joe, tell me some of the ways that we can address when we recognize a wounded student, a wounded youth. How do we deal with that? How do we address them?
Well, there's a lot of ways to address it. I think the first thing we want to do is we want to realize that every behavior is a teachable moment. As I said earlier, you know, to put down that judgment card, you know, that a kid's choosing to behave a certain way because of their wounds, and sometimes it's because of the wounds the behavior is happening.
Not personal.
It's not personal.
That is so powerful.
We do not want to surrender our power during a teachable moment. And, you know, when I was a teacher, I'd want to send them to the principal. When I was assistant principal, I'd send them to the head principal. When I was a head principal, I'd send them to the assistant principal. It just seemed to be a natural progression that I thought somebody else had a better answer. And wounded kids are used to being passed off and not understood. And when we can become a culture of understanding, to understand, to reach, and to transform these children's lives, when we realize that we can run towards their wounds and not run away from them, then we don't surrender our power during a teachable moment. And I wanted everybody, whether you were the support staff, the bus driver, whether you were the superintendent, whether you were a teacher, the principal, that you were dealing with the behavior. And everyone at the school had the ability to teach and invest in their lives by the gift of time. And when we pass, wounded kids, again, believe people don't understand them or have time for them. And so when we pass up those teachable moments, it reinforces that thought that nobody really understands them. So we started investing more time in some of the schools I was at with the teachers. And instead of like suspending kids and spending less time with them, we did community service with them, spend more time with them, and used those types of teachable moments, which empowered them to give to their community, give them self-esteem, that they had something to give this world. And we found out their unique gifts and abilities by providing, again, those opportunities instead of just using the normal suspensions or expulsions.
Okay, so instead of kicking the student out for a week and them sitting at home watching TV, instead of what Texas does, we handcuff them and send them to jail, you did community service. How did that make a significant impact on the schools that was doing that type of programming?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
In what way?
Well, superintendent was getting about 20 angry parent phone calls a month due to discipline, kicking kids out of school. Yeah. And then we started saying the teachers and the administration got together, and we wanted to increase achievement. Well, you only increase achievement with seat time, increased seat time and class time. So, again, we're talking about general behaviors now. Teachers would say, you know, if there was a consequence, the consequence was we weren't going to suspend you out of class and out of the building to be at home. We were going to keep you in school, and your consequence was you were going to do community service Tuesdays and Thursdays after school from 2:30 to 4:30. We had a school bus that would take the kids to and from community service. They'd work at the animal care shelter. They would read to the elderly at a nursing home. Certain wow. community services that empowered them, made them feel good, made them feel like they were valuable in their community. And we started to see changed behaviors. And kids wanted to come to school, and they liked help. We had kids that actually served their community service and still wanted to do more community service because it made them feel good. Provided opportunities
and
for them.
Cut down on the call to the superintendent.
Oh, yeah. And literally, the superintendent discipline went down. Superintendent went to zero phone calls a month on student discipline because we as a school were saying we want to spend more time with these kids and use these teachable moments. So these teachers were spending, and administrators were spending time doing community service. Sometimes they would do them at the school, building bulletin boards. They were doing positive community engagement with their teachers and administrators.
What an awesome idea. That's wonderful.
Built that with a couple of teachers and did that in a few schools. And we've had, I just had a lady today said that she implemented that in her school last year. And it's made an incredible difference in their behavior in the school. And just by, you know, again, once you increase your time with the kids, graduation goes up, grades go up, and expulsions go down.
Well, and I just want to address that, you know, some people that are listening right now might be having heart failure going, I don't need one more thing on my calendar to have to do. And there are other ways to implement the community service. You know, there are so many community groups and things that are looking for ways to engage and be a support. And sometimes you can recruit, you know, some of these different outreach groups, you know, clubs and community organizations and things like that who want to, you know, do something meaningful. And then you've not only created good community service alternative discipline projects, but then you've also created almost a mentorship situation. And so You know, there's lots of creative ways to do it. If the teachers are really just too stretched and you don't quite have that buy-in, you can come up with another way. You know, that's just, those are just a couple of examples of how you can make that work.
Yeah, and you're expanding your groups of influence out there, so where the community is actually involved and interested in what's happening at the school down the road. I mean,
exactly.
that's just an awesome hand in hand. That's how I think this trauma informed communities that's going around now, and I've been to those conferences and all of that and spoke at some of them, and that's the kind of thing that if we don't get caught up in the logistics of everything, can come up with some common solutions that you guys have implemented in Ohio that can be taken nationwide. And that's just an awesome thing.
Well, it really is. And the thing that we tell people is when we all start working from the same playbook and give these kids consistent responses, you know, to what's going on, they're gonna do better, and we're gonna execute our plays better. You know, if everybody's working from a different playbook, kids don't do well with inconsistency. You know, and so we've started doing a lot more community-based training because everybody really is trying to get on the same page for impact, and that's exciting.
Yeah, we want to create that common vision, because we found if we didn't have a common vision, we had constant division.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with the things that are going on all the time, you know, we want our kids to not be indifferent. You know, we want them to feel like they matter. Mm-hmm. So the only way we could do that was provide, again, opportunities for them to do things for other people. And, again, this idea of not wanting them to feel indifferent to the needs of their brothers and sisters, as Mother Teresa would say, and I don't quote her, but paraphrase her, and she says the ills of society is based on the fact that we've become indifferent to the needs of our brothers and sisters. And so we felt if we could get our kids giving back into their community, they wouldn't be indifferent, and they would have a clear vision for their life as well.
And I tell you what, it just teaches life lessons that these kids are going to take for the rest of their life. And I wonder what they learn in jail. I wonder what they learn in the detention halls, falling asleep in their books, when they can be out making a difference and maybe find something inside of them that's triggered and lit and go, hey, I want to do this for the rest of my life type thing. This is wonderful.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm a big quote man, and Joe, I wrote down a quote that you said in one of your interviews that I watched, and you said, teach them out of their trauma, not consequence them out of their trauma. Expound on that, if you will. We only have a couple of minutes, but tell me what you mean by that.
Well, I think, you know, when I was trained to be an administrator, and you know, we want to follow our handbooks. We're not telling anybody not to follow their handbooks and their policies and procedures. But a lot of them, you know, we're trying to consequence kids out of their trauma. And when we started fostering and adopting children in our own home, we realized, you know, being around counselors, being around therapists, getting the training that we did, hanging around with counselors, that they were teaching us that, you know, we need to teach our kids out of their trauma, not consequence them out of their trauma. And I just felt that was so powerful. And I started applying that as a principle, that I found better results when I was using, again, those teachable moments instead of the consequences. Not that there shouldn't be a consequence, but it needs to be a meaningful, teachable moment consequence, which we talked about earlier.
That's great.
Because otherwise suspensions and expulsions, you know, like Joe has said before, those are appropriate. He calls them non-negotiables when people have weapons, drugs, things like that. But even in that, you can still find redeeming qualities in children to give them something to hang their hat on and rise up to when they come back, you know. And but just straight out punitive measures are isolating. And isolation is exactly what wounded children do not need, because that's what they're used to. They're used to just being shunned. And, you know, it continues to pour into their false belief of nobody cares about me. I'm just bad, you know, and that's what they end up looking up to.
Yeah, and there are non-negotiables. And
oh, sure.
And so, but no one's exempt from the thing we say is that trauma is not a life sentence. Trauma doesn't have to be a life sentence. Trauma can be overcome. And
that's,
you know, when we're working in schools with young kids, we want to provide every opportunity to find a redeeming quality in them and provide them an opportunity once they return from school, once a consequence or an expulsion is served. You know, they need to come back with hope. And that's what we wanted to leave them with.
That's great. I tell you what, we only got a minute or two. It's been an awesome hour. But tell the people about this Hope for the Wounded conference in June. Joe and Darty, what could they can they come to it? What can they expect at it? And tell us all about it real quick.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So it's June 17th to the 19th. The 18th and 19th are the main days of the conference. The 17th is a pre-conference workshop with actually Joe and myself based on our new book. So that'll be a fun 3-hour workshop. But, you know, some of the feedback that we got from last year's conference was I would have people come up to me and say, I feel so validated. You know, and I think that was probably one of the highest compliments I heard, because our whole mode is we want people to feel encouraged, equipped, and empowered to keep doing the hard jobs that they're doing. And so that's our goal every time we do a training, a conference, or anything, is we want people to be able to walk away feeling those things, having some doable strategies in their pocket that they can try out, you know, the next day if they want to. We don't want it to be too complicated. Because heaven knows people have enough standards to, you know, have to deal with.
Right.
And so, yeah, and we just want to create that safe space where educators can come and connect with other educators and just find that camaraderie. And it's a good time.
And, you know, we're going to bring in, you know, it's not just all about educators. We're bringing in juvenile court judges, teachers, counselors, psychologists, and Dr. Williams, we have you coming, and we're excited about that. Yeah,
and who else is going to be there?
We have the past president of the Ohio, our National School Boards Association.
Miranda Baird is her name.
Miranda Baird. We have Judge Stephen Teske from Georgia, juvenile court judge.
He's doing some great restorative things.
Yep, and he'll be joining us. He's been a standard at our conference and does an amazing job.
One of our keynotes is Todd Waits, and he has worked with professional musicians, which is amazing because he has one arm, and he has just an amazing story of resilience and how teachers have made a difference in his life and convinced him that he could.
Because he was a survivor of childhood cancer.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And so we've got really inspirational stories. We've got loads and loads of information, loads and loads of strategies for people to come. And the people, this is our fifth or sixth year of the conference. When people come to this conference, they are engaged. They come, they hang around, they have deep conversations. And
we have a little bit of fun, too.
Yeah.
That's going to be a great time. And if you need more information on this, it's Hope, the number 4, thewounded.org, and you can contact Joe and Darty right there on that website and check out this conference. Check out the 3 books that they have, Reaching the Wounded Student, 7 Ways to Transform the Lives of Wounded Students, and their latest book, Supporting the Wounded Educator. And I want to let you know, Joe and Darty, thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on the show tonight, and I just knew this would be an awesome program. And may God just bless you guys and keep the work you're doing. And thank you for being champions out there for the kids, for the wounded, and also the people that deal with the wounded. And I appreciate you all.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. We appreciate you as well.
And looking forward to meeting you and being at that conference in June. As we end up the program, I do this every week, and I just like to know, no matter what you're involved in, no matter where you're at in life, no matter what's happened to you or no matter what's going on with you right now, lean in, huddle up. I got something to tell you. There's always hope. There's always, always hope. Make sure you join us next week for Jennifer Burns is going to be our guest from San Diego, California, right here. And it's going to be on the next edition of Breaking the Silence. Thanks so much and have an awesome week. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.